Joining us now, a 6'2" music journalist originally from Appleton, Wisconsin. He's written for Rolling Stone, Pitchfork, and he's currently a staff writer for UpRocks. He's the author of the book, Your Favorite Band is Killing Me. And he's here with us now, Steven Hayden.
Hey, Steve, welcome to Entertain Us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Well, the song that we're hearing now, Enter Sandman, is one that you reference in an article comparing some of the biggest rock albums from 1991. We'll get to why we just played that song in a second here, but as far as I understand, you've got six really essential albums that came out all within a short amount of time together in 1991. What were these albums?
Well, you have the Black Album by Metallica. You have Pearl Jam 10, their first record. You have the two Use Your Illusion albums by Guns N' Roses, and then Nevermind by Nirvana. So those records all came out in August and September of 1991, within about a six-week span.
So the reason that we played Enter Sandman there is here's a song that when it came out in 1991, you know, it was kind of like this new, exciting, gritty song. And now, you know, it's sort of turned into this arena rock, you know, hey, here are your Milwaukee Bucks sort of thing. So I guess I'm wondering, when you're looking back on these albums, as a critic, like, how hard is it to hear a song like this now when we've attached so many different meanings to it?
Well, first of all, I don't think you can separate the baggage that gets attached to these albums. I think that's impossible. You know, like, The reason why we're talking about these albums 26 years later is the fact that they did make a big impact on people's lives.
So I want to play a couple of these songs from these 1991 albums, because, you know, we're talking about these songs, and I think these are so iconic, and we attach so many emotions, feelings, life memories to some of these songs. I want to play a couple for you and just hear what 1991 Steven Hayden was doing when these songs were popular and what it reminds you of. Alright, what was 1991 Steven Hayden doing when this song was a hit?
Well, you know, all of these albums, they came out right as I was entering eighth grade. And as anyone who has been in the eighth grade will tell you, that is like one of the worst years of your life.
True.
So true.
I turned 14 in September of 1991, where your hormones and your body, you know, have betrayed you, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, you want girls to like you, but they will never like you. You know, your face has exploded into horrible complexion. You know, what that record was, you know, it was a bunch of outcasts striking out against sort of the popular kids in music at that time, and the outcasts took over. So that was incredibly inspiring for me at that point in my life.
At home, drawing pictures of mountaintops with him on top, lemon yellow sun.
All right, 1991, Steven Hayden. Let's hear the story there.
You know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam, they had a rivalry at that time. It was mostly generated by Kurt Cobain because he accused them of being a sellout grunge band.
We never had a fight, ever. I just have always hated their band.
So, you know, I hated Pearl Jam, but I also secretly loved Pearl Jam. But eventually, I gave up the ruse and I came out as a Pearl Jam fan after that. But yeah, in the early going, you know, if I would have heard Jeremy, I probably would have pretended not to like it.
And looking back on these albums now, we're also familiar with Enter Sandman. We're also familiar with Smells Like Teen Spirits. You have this quote in this article that I wanted to ask you about. You write, at this point, I don't know what I'm hearing when I play Smells Like Teen Spirit or Alive or November Rain or Nothing Else Matters or Give It Away. Am I hearing the song or my impression of the song shaped by my own experiences and the overbearing cultural context? Talk more about what you mean there.
Well, you know, with a band like Nirvana, I think especially, I mean, there's so many documentaries about Nirvana. There's so many books. You know, the fact that Kurt Cobain killed himself in 1994, that has really changed how that band is perceived. You know, that they're not looked at now the same way that they were in 1991. In 1991, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit comes out, and the first time I heard that song, I thought it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the title of that song, it's referring to an underarm deodorant aimed at teenagers.
Right.
And, yeah.
But now when we talk about Smells Like Teen Spirit, it's always as this sort of generational touchstone. You know, it has a lot of weight to it. And, you know, you can't really hear these as songs anymore. They're cultural constructs now.
And I want to get back to this idea of music rivalries in just a second here, but we've got one more smash hit from 1991 that we're going to play for you here. Let's take a listen.
Then I'm walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel?
I'm sure that was one that you were rushing to tell all your friends that you were super into, right?
Well, you know, here's the thing about me is that, you know, I feel like I probably liked Walking in Memphis because there was like a middle-aged man inside of me. You know, like a 45-year-old guy wearing a leather jacket, you know. I swear, every single waiting room I've been in, like in the last 26 years, has played that song at some point. Like, that song does not go away. It is indestructible. So Mark Cohn, he's got to be sitting on like a pile of Walking in Memphis cash just from the spins of that song. You know, so hats off to him, man.
He's getting like millions of dollars from dentist offices across the world. It's obscene.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just think of how different your waiting room experiences would be without Mark Cohn. You know, like, he's really soundtracked some of the most tedious moments of your life with that song. So, you know, and he made it a little bit more soulful, you know, sitting in waiting rooms. So, you know, thanks, Mark Cohn.
Well, going back to what you said about rivalries, you talked about this Nirvana-Pearl Jam rivalry. Why is it that we do get so fired up about these rivalries, which, like, ultimately really don't have a winner?
You know, I think this is just part of what people put into pop culture. People will pit two artists against each other that are different in, like, one or two maybe significant ways, and they'll basically treat them as sort of representatives of, like, different ideologies. Like, if you love Nirvana, in 1991, that meant that you were into sort of, like, underground, weird punk rock music.
Mm.
And if you were into Pearl Jam, that meant that you were, like, more for, like, arena rock, or that you were, like, siding with, like, the popular kids in school. You know, and that's a very reductive way of putting it. That's not fair to either band. I mean, you know, both bands contain multitudes and that have nothing to do with, like, those sort of archetypes that were projected onto them.
Mm-hmm.
But that really was how a lot of people saw it. And even to this day, when people argue about those bands, those things will come up. And, again, when people do that, I think they're arguing about more than just the bands. I think that's one of the functions of pop culture. You know, we can't always argue about politics, and we can't always argue about religion. You know, because those get heated very quickly. But we can talk about favorite movies, and we can talk about favorite bands. It's kind of like the Cold War, you know? It was like, you can't fire nukes at each other, but we can do these sort of underhanded things. You know, it's like another way to fight a war without us destroying each other.
So you've been writing music reviews for a long time now. I guess I'm wondering, have you ever gone back and been tempted to revise a review that you did, like, you know, 15, 20 years ago? Like, you know, maybe in the paper somewhere, Stephen Hyden said, man, Sugar Ray's 1459 is the best album ever. Is there ever that temptation to go back and kind of revisit something, you know, through the lens of experience?
Well, by the way, if I did write that about Sugar Ray, I would go back and be even more superlative. You know, I'd bring even more compliments on that record. Yeah, I mean, I feel that way all the time. I feel that way about things I wrote 6 months ago or a year ago, much less 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's just part of, you know, being human. You know, if you're the type of person who listens to something for a week and then says, okay, this is how I feel about it, and then you feel that way forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a pretty close-minded person, I think. You know, like, you know, something that sounds good or bad today, it might sound different in 6 months. You know, like when you've had different experiences or you know, maybe music has changed. Maybe you've heard other records that kind of help you make sense of what you heard in the past. Like, you didn't get it, but now you get it now. So I always look at that as a positive thing. You know, like, a record review to me is never about setting your opinion in stone forever. It's a snapshot of how you felt that day when you wrote something.
All right, well, rock on, Stephen. We'll talk to you later. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Stephen Hyden is a staff writer for UpRocks, and he's the author of Your Favorite Band Is Killing Me.